The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. In recent programs, we have been discussing the annelids, phylum Annelida, and we talked first about the polychaetes, the marine organisms, and we've talked about earthworms. It is interesting to me that there are a number of species of aquatic earthworms, oligochaetes, that are, their normal habitat is in the water. Now, most earthworms have the ability to survive a certain amount of water. I think I mentioned previously that occasionally, at least here in South Carolina, where we get some downpours, it may rain to the point where the earth, the spaces between the particles of the soil becomes filled with water. And the consequence of that is that the earthworms then will begin to come up out of the soil onto the surface in order to avoid asphyxiation. They don't have any mechanism that allows them to absorb oxygen from water. But as long as it's moist only, then earthworms can put up with that. But to be aware of the fact that there are some of the oligochaetes that actually live in the water. I remember from graduate school days, we had some experience trying to identify one example of this that was known as tubifex. But there are a number of species that can do this. And so you have, again, a fair variety in habitats, even within a single class of the organisms that we're looking at in Annelida. Now, the third of the classes is, in some respects to me at least, one of the more the most interesting of the three. This one is the class Hirudinea, Hirudinea. These, of course, are the leeches, and most folks' association with these is simply to know that they are bloodsuckers. There was a time, at least back in medieval days, when people thought that everything was composed of four basic elements, air, fire, earth, water, that diseases were caused by some imbalance of these, and often in an effort to try and to accommodate this view, when people had certain types of diseases, they would be bled. For those of you that are history buffs, you may be aware of the fact that our first president, George Washington, had pneumonia, and he was bled in accordance with the notion that there was too much blood, and so this would help restore his health. Now, whatever a pneumonia patient needs, it is sure not bleeding. And he survived one, and apparently the reasoning was that they didn't get enough blood out and tried it again, and he didn't survive that one very long. It is also interesting to me to note that the use of leeches has come back into use now, not because people, physicians or surgeons, think that humans' bodies are made up of air, earth, fire, and water, but in instances where limbs, particularly fingers or toes, have been cut off, the surgeons can go in and, with immense patience, reattach all of the aortic vessels, but it is simply impossible for them to get down to the level of the small veins and capillaries. And the consequence of that then is that the heart, once the reattachment occurs, the heart will be pumping blood back into the severed appendage. But because the venous circulation has been interfered with, it just accumulates. There's no way for it to enter the venous vessels that would normally return the blood to the heart. And one consequence of this is that often gangrene will set in. And now, to offset that, leeches are used simply to remove the excess blood from the appendage until the venous circulation has attached itself again to the circulation of the body. And whereas the success rate in attaching appendages such as this was very, very low. With the use of the leeches, it has now improved immensely. So it's interesting to me that we found a use presently, a sensible, necessary, helpful use for leeches today after the history that they had back in the Dark Ages. And there are still places on the earth today, particularly in the Orient, where you will find people that will be bled periodically because of some view that this would help restore some kind of balance in the body. Probably most folks can survive a reasonable loss of blood periodically without any ill effects, but I'm not sure it's a good idea nonetheless. The average person is going to have about 5 quarts of blood, and so you can remove a pint, a sixth of that, and a healthy body can accommodate itself to that loss without great difficulty. Obviously, the leeches are going to be occurring primarily in freshwater habitats, but there are a few that are marine, not many, but some. If you think about the nature of the organism, it would be apparent that these animals are going to be much more suited to life in the tropics, where you have high humidity and moisture present regularly. We have some. I was not aware that we had leeches in this country until I was in graduate school, and we were collecting immature insects. And one of the boys in class had found a leech with the the larval leeches attached to the back of the male leech. And at that point, obviously, I became aware of the fact that we do have leeches here. So in temperate climates, you will have leeches occasionally, not usually a lot of them, but they are present. And certainly in the tropics, you'll find immense numbers of them. Size of them, usually half inch to maybe 3 inches in length. There are some smaller than that. And there is at least one giant. The medicinal leech usually is going to be about 2 inches, maybe three, until it's distended with blood. But there is a tropical leech that will get up to 15 inches, 30 centimeters. And in doing some reading about this, I found that occasionally, if a person is in the tropics and simply stops and stays in one spot, these giant leeches that are around, probably because of body heat, are going to migrate toward the person. So I don't know what the response of a person who was aware of being crept up on by a number of 12, 15-inch leeches would be. My inclination would be to stomp or run, I think. So they're not all small, and the blood-carrying capacity of these animals is unbelievable. The medicinal leeches, which I have seen a couple, I think, that might be 3 inches long. Most of them are a little smaller than that. But I have read that they can hold up to a half cup of blood. So that the size of the body can increase markedly as a consequence of their feeding on blood. And some of them, of course, are not strict blood feeders. Some of them are predators. I read with some interest that some of the leeches will feed on slugs and other smaller animals. And also read that there are some of the leeches that have are comfortable in crawling up trees and attacking birds or small vertebrates up in the tree itself. There are not many of those. And knowing the mucus coating that's on leeches, I find it a little difficult, but at least there is records, there are records of that kind of thing happening. By virtue of the blood feeding, some of them it's just a matter of sucking. Some of them, on the other hand, some of them have the ability, they can insert their proboscis into fish gills, soft tissue. But many of them have fairly sharp teeth that they can cut through even relatively thick skin. And in the case of the medicinal leech, that is the case. As they cut through the skin and begin to feed, they will also inject an anticoagulant, so that if you have been bitten by, attacked by a leech, you will find that the wound is very difficult to get the bleeding stopped. sometimes, well, occasionally in class, in appropriate lab, I haven't offered any of those that want to be guinea pigs for leeches. They can do so with my blessing. And rarely we'll have girls that do that, but sometimes the boys will. And what they find is that the wound simply oozes blood for sometimes more than an hour after the leech has been removed because of the effects of the anticoagulant that's there. They are sensitive to a variety of things, including body heat, and in some cases, apparently, they are attracted. This sort of work has been done with inanimate objects that have been coated with such things as sweat, for example, or salt, or some other things. And some of the leeches are attracted even to the inanimate object that's been smeared with some of the things that the are found on the victims of the leeches. Strangely enough, the leeches have a fixed number of somites. You look at all of the leeches, and rather than as it is in the case of earthworms, where you can go from, oh, I guess the smallest number would probably be 20, 30, up to several hundred. In the leeches, there's only about three or four numbers of somites. I don't think I mentioned this when we were talking about the worms, but the earthworms, for a particular species, the number of somites will always be exactly the same. Now, again, we have been caught by the time at an awkward place, but we've looked at some of the characteristics for these leeches, and again, I remind you that the evolutionists answer that the organisms exist as they do because they have lost structures or organs and or gained others is really not a very plausible answer for the organisms that we have been talking about.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.